Welcome in, everyone. It is Thursday, December 9th, 2021. This is Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
She's my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on
yes,
the show.
It's true. Proudly so is what I was supposed to say. I mean, right. Yes.
Supposed to smile and say, yes, I'm the luckiest woman in the world. Coming up on the show today, President Biden is holding a democracy summit to lecture the rest of the world on how to do democracy right.
And the mainstream media is saying, we're not nice enough to President Biden. We should be much nicer. In fact, some of them are saying that they were easier on President Trump, rather, than they are on Biden. We're going to discuss this content analysis. And then we're going to talk about the fact that if the president wants war, so does the media. Mm-hmm. So they're mean to him, but they are pushing his agenda.
Yeah, mainstream media loves war, so they can make a ton of money off of this. And also, President Biden, we're learning now, had secret meetings with the media. This is like a President Biden crap sandwich today on the show. So for those of you who say, like, hey, why don't you ever say anything mean about Biden? Okay, we're an equal opportunity offender here on Morning Invest. We don't care what party you are. If you're corrupt and you do something wrong, we will call you out on it. So you ready to get uncomfortable on this Thursday morning? I am. Let's do it. Morning Invest starts right now. Welcome in, everybody.
Well, we're glad you're here. Don't forget, you should be subscribed to our newsletter. It's free. It helps you catch up on these stories while you are brewing your morning coffee. It's at morninginvest.com, and you'll see a rundown of a lot of this information and more. But today on the show, we'd like to talk about how the U.S. is hosting a democracy summit today with over 100 countries. Now, I'll give you two guesses who's not invited. Would you like to take a guess?
Luxembourg.
I don't know, actually.
The Vatican.
Probably not.
So there's 196 countries, and we chose 100 of them.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to say Russia and China are not on the list.
Ding, ding, ding. You win a lollipop.
So what is... Okay, a democracy summit. So President Biden is going to get together to decry the fact that democracy is on the decline in the world and we need to do something about it. It's in a recession. Democracy is in a recession and authoritarianism is on the march. It's on the rise.
Now, when the list of invitees was released in November, both Russia and China gave kind of like, we don't care. We don't want to come to your party anyway. But now that the party has begun, both countries are saying this is a Cold War mentality. You know, this is sort of propaganda for your way of life. And by excluding us, you're sort of, I mean, it is a bit like, hey, everybody come here and we'll talk about how we're going to deal with them, right? So it's not very covert, I would say. The Minister of Foreign Affairs for China said, what the U.S. did proves that so-called democracy is just a pretext and tool for it to pursue geopolitical goals, suppress other countries, divide the world, serve its own interest, and maintain its hegemony in the world. So... you know,
yeah.
They're not wrong, but I'm not going to say China's in the right.
Where are they wrong here? I mean, that's the question, right? So China and Russia have come out, a new report that I'm reading this morning, the Chinese and Russian state media right now are working overtime, according to this report, to denigrate the Biden administration's summit for democracy taking place this week, calling the project hypocritical. They say they've sent out a flurry of tweets from Chinese diplomats. They're referring to the event as a so-called democracy summit. With a Russian political commentator writing in a state-run Chinese newspaper comparing the U.S. initiative to, quote, a mistress of a brothel teaching morale to schoolgirls, end quote.
How come you can say brothel?
Because I, you know, that's old school. That's old world.
Okay.
But we can't say the R word apparently because we'll be demonetized. So this is interesting though, that the U.S. purports to be the arbiters of democracy, right? They are the ones like it's always said, like, if you hold the party, like you're the ringleader, right? Mm-hmm. So that the U.S. is saying, we are going to hold this party because we are the ringleaders of democracy. We are the ones that carry freedom throughout the world. We're the freest country in the world. We hold up human rights. We hold up personal liberties. We hold up your right to privacy. All of these things. We hold human, I mean, specifically taking care of human beings. And we can't, we can say that with a straight face in the rest of the industrialized world, when there are countries that are far freer than us, far freer than we are in the United States, but on a number of major categories, from personal liberties to privacy. Heck, Iceland. You want privacy for your internet? You want privacy that the government stays out of your internet searches and all of that stuff? Go to Iceland. The most, the strongest cyber country in the world compared to the United States. So the United States cannot be going out there telling us that they are better than everyone else. And we are the leading, a shining example on the hill for democracy.
Well, absolutely right. And this is an embarrassing time to have it. Now, the Justice Department is suing the state of Texas. Local officials for elections are resigning at alarming rates. The House and the Senate cannot agree on passing bills to protect basic voting rights. So it's like, do as I say, not as I do kind of summit. And it feels more like propaganda than actually like a how-to. You know, it would be nice if other countries were coming here and saying, oh, how do you handle this? You seem to do it so beautifully. That's not the case. And now, yes, it does very much feel like a Cold War with China and with Russia. And just this week, the United States says, well, we won't be sending diplomats to the Beijing Olympics in 2022. And now Canada says we're going to do the same thing, but our athletes will compete. It's like, who does that hurt exactly? Do I care if American diplomats are not going to cocktail parties at the Olympics?
Well, here's the thing.
China's response on that was kind of funny because they're like, we didn't invite your diplomats anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And who, I frankly didn't even know that diplomats went to the Olympics. And by the way, who cares about diplomats going to the Olympics? Because they're not going to be doing any diplomacy when they're there. What they're going to be doing is going out to expensive dinners on taxpayer dollars. That's That's all they're going to do. They're going to go to lavish parties and go out every night and and they're not doing any diplomacy. Give me a freaking break. And who cares? On top of that, now, if you want to be the leader in the world and show what democracy stands for, and you stand for women's rights, you stand for human rights, you stand for humanitarian rights, then you say, you know what, we're not, forget the diplomatic boycott, we're boycotting the Olympics altogether. The United States will not attend your little dog and pony show Olympics until you can stand up for women's rights and human rights in China.
No, they're not going to do that.
No, but the Women's Tennis Association did, and the head of the association, Simon, I should be continuing to stand up and give him like standing ovations, because he said, we're not going to participate in any of your events. We're going to lose $1 billion out of our bottom line. We're going to close down these events until you can investigate these charges against Peng Shuai, the woman's tennis star. And we're not going to be involved in any of your events. And the Olympic Committee's not doing that, but they are.
Yeah.
So the United States, you know, Biden also plans to speak about the importance of voting rights at home. That's another piece of this. And going to be speaking about, fundamental right around voting. And he says the efforts to curtail voting rights is the most un-American thing imaginable. So that's among the things they'll be holding for at this big summit.
Wait. He's saying that to other people?
Uh-huh.
As if they don't know what's going on in our own country.
Right. Yes.
You must protect voting rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Protect voting rights.
We're going to try that too.
Maybe we'll give it a shot here at home. It'll be interesting to see what tone they strike, though. Do they come out here as like the big brother, like, or the parent, like with wagging the finger at the other countries, telling them how we're better than you?
I was going to say, it sounds to me like America's about to mansplain democracy to everybody.
That's a headline.
Yeah.
That is a headline. That's going in the newsletter tomorrow.
Mansplain. Look,
I know you didn't ask, but let me just go ahead and tell you how democracy works.
Well, who's showing up to this? I mean, who are the countries that are showing up?
Who
do we have a list?
Who are these people?
Let's see. I'll find a list discuss this.
I find it interesting that they're going to speak out on a number of issues, including voting rights. White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre is also going to address the summit Thursday and again on Friday. Yes, Biden will, to reversing the democratic recession and ensuring that democracies deliver for their people. Yeah, because our democracy is really delivering for its people. I just started reading the book, The War on Small Business. I started reading it last night.
Piss you right off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm like three chapters into it. And man, the way that Carol Roth, who wrote the book, lays this out, in that she points out that, boy, as a centralized democracy, the United States really just screwed the pooch on our COVID response. I mean,
I don't think she says that. What does that saying mean?
I don't know. Screw the pooch. Just mean they, you know, did an awful job. Like, you know, the administration, the government, like with this, from the CDC's response to not allowing testing. I mean, on and on and on. It was just mistake after mistake after mistake because it was in the hands of the government.
Yes.
And so we need to make sure that democracies deliver for the people. Like, you're going to say that with a straight face at your summit. And here you are as in a democracy where now 7% of all small businesses are permanently out of business, done, gone, you know, and human being and Americans are suffering like never before with rising wages and healthcare costs that are skyrocketing.
Yeah.
Burdensome student loan debt. We need to tell the rest of the world about how democracies need to deliver for their people.
Well, it reads like a who's who of Europe and Africa, Caribbean nations. Brazil gets to come. I mean,
okay,
you know, if Brazil gets to come, certainly China should be able to come. Mexico. Yeah, you're right. It does feel a lot like it's almost like a death of a salesman type move where it's like proving that we're still relevant in this space, even though our democracy doesn't look awesome from the outside in or from the inside out.
Well, we got more news to get to here on the show. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Alto IRA. Did you know that the majority of people right now are investing in cryptocurrency through a taxable account? So every time you trade cryptocurrency, it ends up being a taxable event. Well, what if you could trade it inside of a self-directed IRA that is tax-free? So all of those profits are tax-free. That's what you can do with an Alto IRA account. I love the Alto IRA account. I set mine up a few weeks ago. That's how I'm doing a lot of my trading inside of that account using my Alto IRA crypto self-directed IRA. And they've partnered with Coinbase. So the Coinbase wallet, it makes it seamless inside of your IRA. Really beautiful app design. The website is gorgeous and it's incredibly easy to move over like your old 401k that's been sitting there doing nothing or your old IRA that you had for years that's not doing anything. Why not put it to work inside of a self-directed IRA that you can invest? Not just crypto, you can invest in real estate, you can invest in real assets outside of this corrupt government system. Put it to work for you. So Alto IRA is easy. It's the easy way to put crypto into your IRA. It's an absolute game changer. You can invest with as little as $10. Just get started like that. You can create a free account in just a few minutes. The setup was super easy. There's no setup charges or anything. You can do secure trading 24/7 because, again, they've integrated with Coinbase and the market never sleeps, right? Bitcoin's always tradable, unlike the stock market, right? Which bell closes, market closes. Traditional Roth and SEP IRA options as well. And they have industry leading security inside of Alto IRA. So it's super easy to do to sign up. That link on your screen is where you want to go. AltoIRA.com/morning. To open an account with as little as $10, just go to altoira.com/morning. That's altoira.com/morning. Start investing cryptocurrency today. Go to altoira.com/morning. Our thanks to them for supporting the show and my favorite self-directed account now. So thanks for being awesome.
All right. Well, is the media too harsh on President Biden? And was it much nicer to President Trump? A new report out says, in fact, that the media has been more criminal, more critical.
That's a Freudian slip.
I suppose. More critical to President Biden at this point in his presidency than they were to President Trump. Now, if you read this report, you will see some sort of side-by-side headlines, for instance, you know, jobs numbers up 200,000. That's wonderful when Trump was president versus jobs numbers up only 200,000. That's terrible for President Biden. Okay. But I will point out to you, as you read this content analysis, that it's not really a content analysis done by a person. It was an algorithm search that a research company decided to upload media coverage from publications from CNN to Breitbart to Daily Caller to, you know, both sides of the spectrum, liberal media, whatever. And they concluded that the media was using harsher words or making more negative statements towards President Biden than they did at this point in President Trump. Now, that is not a content analysis. That is an algorithm search. It does not necessarily mean that those stories were negative or negative bent. It was just an analysis of the actual words, right? So they can't really calculate for, say, intonation or content that may have been slightly critical but was overall positive. It just takes an article that maybe said something critical and labels it critical when that might not be. So I used to be a research assistant for actual content analysis social scientists, and I know that this is not the same, so you can take it how you feel. It doesn't feel true to me is what I'm gonna say. Does it feel true to you?
No, it doesn't. And we should provide the context here that this is Dana Milbank at the Washington Post, who said he felt like, well, he's like, I'm reading these headlines every day, and I personally feel like they're just being really hard on President Biden. So what I'm doing now is I'm going to reach out to a company named Forge.ai, which is the name of the company, and I'm going to get a request from them, and I just want them to do a search of more than 200,000 news articles and see what sort of sentiment analysis of coverage using algorithms that give weight to certain adjectives based on their placement in the story, etc. And sure enough, he says that, oh, it's not my opinion. The media treats Biden as badly or worse than Trump. Here's the proof. So then what does President Biden do? I know we're skipping stories here in the rundown, but what does President Biden do? He then has a secret meeting with members of the press in order to try to curry favor with the media.
You know, there's so many things that I think are wrong with this methodology. For instance, we are in a national pandemic. Things are really hard right now. COVID numbers are bad. So adjectives are going to be negative because of where we are right now historically at this cross section of time. Whereas when President Trump was less than a year into his presidency, we did not have any of these types of issues. We had no medical pandemic. We were not in a recession. There was not inflation like this. And so you can't say that because the adjectives seem to be worse that it is more negative coverage about the president. That's total crap.
Right. And then to also, though, hold a secret meeting with the media to say you're just being too mean on the president. So according to the Daily Mail, White House held a secret meeting with news organizations to demand better coverage. After this Washington Post column that we just showed you from Dana Milbank ran, and well, boy, this is bad news. So what do we need to do? We need to hold a meeting with members of the media to make sure that you're not being so mean to the president. So who met with them, right? This is the question. Three senior White House officials have embarked on a campaign to persuade newsroom executives to be more favorable in their coverage of President Biden, according to the report. The trio, the National Economic Council Deputy Director David Kamen, Bharat Rumaruti, along with Ports Envoy John Porcari of the ports, you know, dealing with all the ports for the getting food supplies into the United States, have been briefing major newsrooms over the past week. Basically, the officials have been discussing with the newsrooms trends pertaining to job creation, economic growth, supply chains, and more. The basic argument that has been made is that the country's economy is in much better shape than it was last year. So you need to go out there then, and you need to tell your audience that inflation is not hurting you. Inflation is not bad. Things are fine. President Biden's a good leader.
Your shipments are coming. There's no backlog.
Yeah, your ports are opening. Don't worry about this. And I love that Darcy wrote in his newsletter on this thing saying that I'm told the conversations have been productive with news anchors and reporters, and producers are getting to talk with you White House officials. So this is pure propaganda. I mean, they're going right to the newsrooms and telling them basically what to say, and then they're turning right around and doing broadcast pieces on it. Turning right around and going on the air and doing pieces about how the ports are loosening and supplies are coming in.
And then we get news reports like the clip you played last week on CNBC where they're like, but everyone can afford it. Inflation's bad, but most people are fine. It doesn't hurt you. It's okay.
It's fine. Totally fine. Don't even worry about it. Don't worry about it at all. So this is a, you know, you want to understand how things work. So, you know, stop being mean to me. Stop being mean to me. Don't scold. Don't scold me anymore. Don't make these headlines that make President Biden look bad. You know, he's Uncle Biden. Be nice to him.
Well, meanwhile, while the president seems to want to prepare us for war, the mainstream media seems to as well.
Yeah, the mainstream
media. So, I mean, this is one and the same type of story.
If you've been watching the mainstream media over the past few days, they are ready to go, folks. They are ready to go. They are lined up. They've got their reporters already out there on the field. You know, like this ABC News piece, they've already got a reporter who's there with his helmet on and his press badge, and he's there on the front lines, right, in the Ukraine, ready for war. Why? Because the mainstream media makes just an absolute boatload of money when we are at war. Heck, do you remember the famous videos of CNN? The reason CNN became a national name in everybody. Look, here's the reporter wearing his helmet. Here he is showing us the front lines of what's about to happen here on this war. You know, remember CNN though, of course, CNN famously with those night vision goggle images and the bombings over Baghdad and, you know, and Wolf Blitzer reporting from those zones and wall to wall coverage, put them on the map, made them a household name. We CNN expanding coverage to just about any TV set in America, and they made absolute bank money on this. So no wonder every major news network right now is pushing for this. But Media Matters had the gall to say that this is a problem. So Media Matters tweeted out this the other night. Here's Media Matters reporter who covers Fox News. This Media Matters reporter, Nikki McCann Ramirez, literally her job, as she writes on her Twitter feed, is I watch brain poison. That's what she does. That's her job. She says that I watch brain poison. So she's putting it right out there that what she watches is Fox News every day. And she just literally is like a stenographer for Fox News. So she's like, here we go. When Tucker's show covered, oh, Putin just wants to keep his Western border secure. And she writes, and away we go, meaning that's here. Oh, really? The right, the conservative news media now is going to say that Russia is just defending itself? We need to be propping up war. To which Glenn Greenwald said, Media Matters angry that one cable network and only one is devoting airtime to arguing the U.S. should not go to war with Russia over Ukraine. Media Matters employees should tear themselves away from 24/7 live blogging of Fox News and go enlist to fight Russia in defense of Ukraine.
Okay.
I like Glenn's take on that. But it is true. I mean, if you think about all of the mainstream media's coverage has been, this is trouble.
We got to get in there.
What are we doing? What are we doing to prepare? I mean, what are we doing to prepare for this? Are we getting our troops ready? Is NATO prepared? Good thing we just passed this $768 billion defense budget the other day. So now our military is ready for the evil enemy, the Russian bear, which is about to attack Ukraine. When the actual story, if you pay attention to what's happening, is that Russia does not want an increase of the massive military-industrial complex that is NATO, building a new relationship right on its border, an extension of massive military might around the world coming up right on its border. What would the United States do if Russia said, you know what, we're just going to line...
We're going to take over Mexico and just be right there.
We're going to be right there.
Chill out right on that border.
Yeah, we're partnering with Mexico. We're going to extend our might right to your border. So we'll be right there waving at you. We wouldn't stand for it.
Of course not. Of course not. And you, I mean, you have to think about there's a lot of different reasons why the mainstream media would want more. It's not just ratings, right? Although it is that. And we are a media company here, too. We notice that when things are more desperate, when there's a big story, right, you get better numbers. That's just how it goes. But we cannot then change our coverage in order to make it make up stuff so that our business does better. That's unconscionable on our behalf, on our part. But the mainstream media doesn't seem to see it that way. They're fine to craft a story that will keep you, because if they can scare you enough to think war's coming, you're going to glue yourself to that TV, right? Not to mention the cushy relationships they have with politicians, which we've just discussed, why it will bring money into more sponsors, why it's good for business, right? Of course. So it's prudent, I guess, for us to realize what the mainstream media is doing, and then prudent for us to not extrapolate too much and just, like my mom says, hold your horses.
One of the things you should notice about this video, by the way, that I'm showing you on the screen, is that these right here, these bazookas that they're carrying, those are all U.S. military made. These are U.S. military crafted guns and ammo and weapons that have all been sent to the Ukraine. See right there, from the United States of America. They've all been paid for. I mean, we sent it to them. I don't even think they pay us for it. We probably just donated it to them.
It was probably right in a bill. One of our bills.
I mean, just like all of the old guns from Afghanistan. Like we propped up Afghanistan in their fight against Russia many, many moons ago in the 1980s. So we, in fact, they were attacking us with some of the same guns that we had provided them many years ago in Afghanistan. So all of these weapons, no wonder we want this. The military industrial complex is salivating about this. And of course, look at that headline, rising tensions on the front lines. I got news for you. It's been 8 years. They've been in this 8 years. Are the tensions right? Who's to say the tensions are rising? The tensions are rising. How do they know?
It's interesting to me that the official kind of U.S. response to this was a threat of retaliation with economic sanctions, not actually going to war. So it's interesting how the U.S., like, our official stance was like, we will economically cripple you if you invade Ukraine. And the media is like, we're going to war.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they love war. They don't want just an economic sanctions. Economic sanctions aren't sexy to CNN, you know?
No, that's boring. Well, it's funny because, like, I mean, when you really get into, like, the deep politics of it, like NATO being right on Russia's border, like they can't really go to war with Russia because, like the flip of a few valves and most of Europe is crippled in their energy supply.
Yes.
So it's like it's just watching the media like salivate over something that can't happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, where are they going? Where are you walking to?
Right.
And these images of like bombed out buildings and things like that, like they're very selective.
Yeah.
I'm sure not all of the Ukraine looks like this. I've never been there, but.
No, but we're going to the front lines. We're going to show you. And look, I love how they have the flags side by side. Like this is, it's already a war to them. Like we've got the Russian flag and the Ukrainian flag versus like it's a soccer match, you know?
Why does that lady have to wear straw, or that guy?
I don't know.
On his head.
It's very similar to like the coverage of the Portland protests last year, where it was like, if you watch the media, it looked like Portland was just like hell on earth war zone. And like, you know, like everything was all, and it's like, if you could drive around Portland, it was totally fine. It was not like that. But I had even like traveled around and had Uber drivers when I stand for Portland, like, oh, is it really that bad there? I'm like, no. I mean, it's like, it's not a war zone, but you know, it just depends on what direction you aim your camera.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, good on them for, good on some members of the media. I mean, right from the beginning on this story, at least I'm giving ourselves a pat on the back, but I absolutely abhor war, would absolutely do not want us in any wars around the world. And this show, we've been calling out the media hypocrisy on this and, you know, making sure that you're aware of how this media response is going to unfold. And it's just amazing because we were both in the mainstream media for so long. You just see how this thing starts to play out. And sure enough, like, over the past few days, like, they know they can beat this drum. CNN, which is trying to rebuild itself right now as a news organization, what better way for them to get back to the top after this Don Lemon scandal, after the Chris Cuomo scandal, and all of that, for them to have a war? Wouldn't that be the greatest thing that they could have?
It would. It would.
Yeah. Anyway, we got more news to get to here on the show. But first, you want to tell us about our show sponsor?
Oh, you want me to do that instead of the story? Sure.
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's do that. All right. So let's talk about your health, shall we, Clayton?
Yes.
This is his favorite thing to discuss, is where his wife tells him how to be more healthy and he goes and hides from me. That's exactly what happened today, because we had checkups. We both got clean bills of health. And then I proceeded to lecture him about better hydration. And now I'm going to do the same to you. Mm-hmm. Lucky you. You get to pretend you're married to
me. I'm out of here.
No. Okay. I want to tell you about our show sponsor, Liquid IV. You know, it's getting colder out there. The pandemic rages on. It's a really good time to think about doubling down on your own health. So Liquid IV is a hydration tool that makes it easier for your body to stay hydrated, not just with water, but with vitamins and minerals as well, that can support a strong immune system. One stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. So you know the old wives' tale that when you get sick, you should drink a Gatorade because of the electrolytes. Well, Gatorade is actually full of sugar. You should actually drink something that gets electrolytes and hydration directly to the cells. And that's why you should consider Liquid IV. Not only that, but the products taste quite nice. Our kids really like them. We see them stealing them and putting them in their water bottles. There's watermelon, strawberry, lemon lime. I think there's also
they had some really good ones for summer. I had watermelon, but like I had a pina colada one for summer. But that's the one when I got COVID and I took the pina colada one.
It helped a lot.
It helped tremendously because I was so dehydrated, and I mean I just could not get water in me fast enough. And thankfully, like that's what I was taking. Like I was using this while I had COVID to rehydrate.
Yes. It is much healthier than a sports drink. Although I do, you know, and back in the day, I thought that I needed Gatorade too when I got sick. That probably was making me sicker. This is the exact opposite because it has no GMOs, it's vegan, it's free of dairy, soy. And it's actually going straight into the places where you need hydration the most. So the company is donating 4 million servings in response to COVID-19 to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, and active military. They have already donated over 11 million servings globally. So you can try it out if you'd like at Walmart, or you can get your own order shipped directly to your house. You can get a 25% off discount when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code INVEST. That's 25% off anything when you get better hydration today using the promo code INVEST at liquidiv.com and use the code INVEST.
Awesome sauce. All right, let's talk about wages and inflation. So we've got some new numbers out. We've been tracking, obviously, what's been happening on the inflation front now for the past number of weeks, as it is a reality. If you've noticed, of course, the cost of goods have gone up and exploded across the United States. And obviously, when we see inflation, rich people are fine because it actually makes them more profitable when you pay more for things. So Wall Street is happy when we have inflation. But average Americans, poor and middle class Americans, get hit the hardest as all of the cost of healthcare and food and gas all go up and rent goes up, and yet wages are not going up.
Well, a new conference board survey shows that companies are planning to increase wages by an average of 3.9% in 2022. Now, that sounds nice, but when you put it next to other numbers in the economy, it's not so great. Now, consider people on fixed income through Social Security are getting a 5.9% raise when the calendar hits January, right? So they get a cost of living increase of almost twice what working people are getting. And inflation is currently sitting above 6%. So if inflation is above 6% and your raise is only 3.9%, you're not getting a raise at all. You're still losing over 2%, right?
Right.
Same thing for people on fixed income. If they're only getting a 5.9% raise in their Social Security payments, but inflation is over 6%, they're getting a raise of zero. That's a net zero, right? So it doesn't seem great. Now, the Labor Department released statistics saying that fewer people than ever are quitting their jobs, though still an astronomical number of people are quitting per month, to the tune of 4 million. 4 million people a month are like out, right? Without any plan to go to the next job. And so It seems like that's pretty good, but employers are not applauding any of this. In fact, they say that job openings increased to 11 million positions available, but still few people were hired. So people don't want to do these jobs. They don't want to take these jobs, and they don't want to stay in the jobs that they have right now. And so who's getting this 3.9% raise is the few people who are staying put, I suppose.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to think about, like, well, how can we get people to work? What could we do? How could the government incentivize this? And Japan has a really interesting program on trying to tackle this wage disparity. And they just rolled out this plan for massive tax breaks for companies that actually lift wages. Well, think about that for a second. Then there's a tax reason, a tax incentive for these companies to raise wages, and it benefits them. So now
Build Back Better has that for the media.
For the media.
Yeah.
All right. So the media companies
would get this exact tax break. The Build Back Better law has a tax break for media companies to write off salaries. So that absolutely is an incentive to raise salaries. For the media.
For the media.
Not for small business, not for anybody else, really.
Unbelievable to think that, like, that's who needs the help right now is, you know, CNN needs the help. MSNBC really needs the help right now.
They do.
They need the help. They're in trouble. Absolutely in trouble. And so we see the continued rise of prices, 6% on inflation right now. We were talking 2% just a few months ago. And this genie is not going to be put back in the bottle, at least for another year or so. Fed Chief Jerome Powell said that we're looking at inflation rates staying around this hot, probably through 2022, maybe even into 2023. So as your rent goes up, healthcare costs go up, price of food goes up, gas prices, everything else goes up, and rent, your wages are not going to keep up with this, simply. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Yes.
What do we, 6% inflation is devastating to average Americans. And a new report says that rising prices need to be curbed fast. But what can the president of the United States do in this regard?
You're right. Yes. Incentivize hiring and also provide federal law that protects certain liberties that come along with the job, such as parental leave and, you know, more incentives. Yeah, I mean, that's what the tax plan is a series of incentives. So there's a lot that they could do, but they don't want to if it doesn't, because, you know, their buddies at the top are not unemployed. They're not suffering.
You know, the thing is, though, the Federal Reserve has been, you know, happy to just continue to funnel billions of dollars to Wall Street to make sure that Wall Street gets tons of money. Right. And then on top of that, these interest rates are kept artificially low. So these interest rates should not be as low as they are right now. And they're being kept there by the Federal Reserve. And specifically, there's a new report out this morning that says that Gilbert Garcia is a managing partner over at Garcia Hamilton and Associates and says that he says inflation is too high. The central bank needs to move quicker to get it under control by raising interest rates. He says this has been kept artificially low for too long. And if you want to take a look at this chart, This is the episodes of U.S. inflation through history. Look where we were during World War II, 20% inflation post-World War II, okay? Then a plummet to about 10% during the Korean War. Then we saw an economic expansion through the 1960s, when we saw the oil shocks of the 1970s and 80s, the early 1980s, when we saw interest rates at around 18, 19%, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, my dad was a realtor at the time, and he talked about, like, the early 1980s. He worked for Century 21, and he said, you know, you had 18, 19% interest rates at that time. Like, think about trying to get a mortgage with an 18 or 19% mortgage rate. And now where we are here on the far right side of your screen, and interest rates are at like 2%.
Yeah.
2%. I mean, something's out of whack here, and it's the Fed's doing.
I don't know if you got to this point in the book, but she points out that low interest rates were supposed to be temporary. Yeah. They were in response to the mortgage crisis. And you know, then President Trump continued to sort of browbeat the Fed and say we want low interest rates because it made him look good, right? But most things like this in the United States, when we're told, oh, that's going to be temporary, they end up not being temporary. Did you know that income tax was supposed to be temporary?
No, I didn't.
When it was written into the Constitution in the 1800s, it was supposed to expire. And then Congress wrote in a bill to make it permanent. So we no longer consider it temporary. But it was supposed to be a temporary fix to that kind of thing. Income tax now is a thing.
Well, that's what
that's a certainty.
What, I mean, that's what Elon Musk talked about the other day, right? At that summit with the Wall Street Journal. He said, anytime you have regulations in a country, unless they've written in with a sunset provision, he said almost every one of them is going to be here forever. Like, they never are sunsetted. They are always here. They never go away. And that is true of these interest rates within the United States, that they are, we saw two different rate slashes over the past few days or past few months during the pandemic. The Fed, after being browbeat by President Trump, put in an emergency rate cut to drop it down a little bit. Then a few months later, they did it again. And they just stayed there. These rate cuts have just stayed there artificially low. So that, yeah, you can get a mortgage, you know, at 2.95%, which is unbelievable when you look at this chart. It's unbelievable. And you see, you know, we saw the gas price spikes of a number of years ago, and now these supply chain disruptions and artificially low interest rates kept at this level. You know, just really, really stunning. Really, really stunning. Oh, boy. Well, that was, we've got...
I mean, that's basically what's going on in Turkey as well, where Erdogan is like artificially keeping the interest rate really, really low while their inflation is just like spiraling out of control.
Right.
And he's got that whole mentality of like, no, this is fine. Everything's fine.
And everything's like, fine. Nothing to see here.
It's like he's taking a page right out of our book. I wonder if that comes with our Learn Democracy plan.
It's our Learn Democracy 101. Yeah. 20% inflation rate in Turkey. 20%. Yeah. And
it's getting worse too.
Getting worse, and you have run on the banks. You have a currency now. That's why I try to talk about here on the show all the time. If you have your money tied to the U.S. currency, I can't help you. You know, I just can't help you. You've got to move your money. Be smart about it. I'm not a financial advisor. You know, I'm not a CPA. So do your own thing. But if you have your own money tied to the U.S. dollar, I just can't help you. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. Yes, you need a little bit of liquid cash, obviously, for transactions and things like that. But that should not be the bulk of your savings or your financial future. I mean, when you look at things that are a hedge against inflation, like real estate, gold, silver, that's why there's such a demand for these items right now and precious metals, because of the runaway government spending. On top of that, cryptocurrency, outside of this centralized banking system. You know, Carol Roth makes the point in this book, the death of small business, or the war on small business. I encourage you all to read it. I mean, it just came out. I'm on like chapter 3, but it is a page turner. So you really understand like how the government just screwed small businesses and poured just billions of dollars into Wall Street to make sure that Wall Street was taken care of while these small businesses got screwed. And you realize that the printing of this money, it just continues us on a downward spiral. And the United States, I don't believe, is going to be able to bounce back from this. I don't see how it can. You can't print your way out of this mess. And so you need to protect yourselves, guys. You need to protect your families. And I think cryptocurrency is the one of the absolute ways to do that. Even just starting small and starting to invest small. People ask me all the time, like, what kind of crypto wallet are you using? Well, I want to tell you about one that I just started using. It's called Exodus, and it is absolutely fantastic. Tell you a little bit more about Exodus right here. Guys, it's time to break free of this corrupt government U.S. dollar banking system. It is collapsing all around us. And one way to do that is with cryptocurrency. And I'm going to tell you about one of my new favorite crypto wallets. I love what Exodus has done with their crypto wallet. It is gorgeous. I love companies that update their software so often because they take care of every little detail, making sure that security is top-notch. Every little pixel, every little image, you know, you hear David and I here on the show talk all the time about apps that we love and how clean and easy they are to use. Well, that is Exodus. So Exodus allows you to trade all of these different cryptocurrency assets, and they keep adding new ones. Like a few weeks ago, they had 100. Now they've got 150 plus. They just keep adding coins and different cryptocurrencies that you can manage all right from your phone, your desktop. It doesn't matter where you are. And I just love how they really understand the benefits of cryptocurrency. They want you to help exit the system. There's a lot that I love about Exodus, but their live charts are gorgeous. And they have a built-in exchange, of course, which, come on, you don't want to miss that. So with a crypto wallet, you actually get 24/7 human support if you have any issues moving money around or just to get set up. It couldn't be easier. All the time I get questions from investors. Even yesterday's show, I had someone ask me live on the show, hey, Clayton, what's your favorite crypto wallet? And I'm going to tell you right now, it's Exodus. And if you're a newbie, who cares? In fact, Investopedia ranked Exodus crypto wallet as the best crypto wallet for beginners. So it's not intimidating at all. Like, I've seen some of these other exchanges that are just bonkers. It's like you need a PhD to navigate their website. Not Exodus. It makes it super simple to trade, to receive, to exchange, and to study your portfolio and charts and managing your money right there so simply inside of Exodus. You can experience the world's best cryptocurrency wallet from any location. Use their mobile wallet right to your desktop. It all syncs seamlessly. You can monitor market movements right on the go. You can exchange crypto in just two taps. That's it. And it syncs right with your Exodus desktop app, so you're always in sync no matter where you are, and they have effortless hardware security. So go check them out right now. The website is exodus.io. I-O. Remember, it's exodus.io. Go check it out. Sign up. Check out how easy their app is to use. You will not be disappointed. My favorite new crypto wallet. Again, exodus.io. Download it today. And Lisa in the chat says, Clayton, can you put into layman's terms what a crypto wallet is, please? Well, there's two types of crypto wallets, right? There's a hardware wallet that looks very similar to like one of those little USB thumb drives. And a hardware wallet means that you can take whatever crypto assets you own, and you can then take it and put it onto that little hardware wallet and then disconnect it from your computer so it's not tied to the internet. Now, an exchange like Exodus or Binance or any of the bigger exchanges, those are exchanges. So you're putting your stuff into their crypto wallet while you make those exchanges. Now, some are way more secure than others, and that's where Exodus has a level up on a lot of different companies. So I think Exodus has a beautiful crypto internet-based hardware crypto wallet on the internet. So it's just two different things. Like one is in the cloud, one is a hardware. I recommend Ledger, or that's the one that I got. Natalie actually got it for me for Father's Day, was the Ledger hardware wallet. It's like a little thumb drive, and you just plug it in, and you can move your cryptos, you can move your different coins onto the hardware wallet, disconnect it from the internet, and then they're there. And the asset continues to appreciate or do what it's going to do, and you own it. You know, it's like having a vault, you know. You can plug it back in at any time, and you can sell it if you want. You can add more to it. But that is secure when it's not connected to the internet. I like to think of it as like Battlestar Galactica. Did you ever watch that show? Where like Battlestar Galactica, the main ship, is disconnected from the internet, basically. So that's why it didn't get taken over by the Cylons, right? And so because it wasn't plugged into the Matrix, it was able to be protected. And that's kind of how I see crypto hardware wallets, you know, not being plugged into the Matrix. So, all right, we got another story to get to here on the show. That's all that was? That's all that was?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Natalie's back. We took a seat. All right. You sit down?
I am going to sit down.
She had to run. We had some people here like staying with us for a few weeks, mother-in-law and her husband, and been guarding the door for us, but they're off doing some shopping today, so we don't have anyone to guard the door when the Christmas deliveries have been coming to the house.
So I get that job.
Yeah. So Natalie's had to jump up. Okay. Natalie's back. So I want to talk about this story now, which is New Zealand. So let's talk about New Zealand, which is now moving to ban cigarettes for all future generations. This is an amazing story. When I saw this, I was like, what? So anyone born after the year 2008 will not be able to buy cigarettes or tobacco products in their lifetime. Ever.
Period.
Period.
Zero.
Under the law, like if you show your driver's license and you're born after 2008, they're going to be like, sorry, you cannot buy them. If you were born in 2007, you're still good. You can still get cancer and you can still go and buy them if you want to. It's going to be enacted next year. The move is part of a huge crackdown across New Zealand on smoking, to try to crack down on smoking in general, but over the entire country.
Yeah, so this is now one of the toughest cigarette laws in existence. And it's interesting, specifically because we had a chat yesterday that said the government's number one job is to protect us. And I've been thinking about this a lot because I wasn't sure that I agreed completely. Is the government's number one job to protect us? But if that is true, is it not incumbent on the government to take away things that are harmful, right?
Right.
This is something the American government has really not wanted to do. They don't want to take chemicals out of our personal care products. They don't want to take away harmful products that are bad for us. And New Zealand
says... Wait a minute.
Says,
I thought that President Biden is going to hold a summit today over the next few days telling us why we are the greatest democracy in the world and other people need to follow our lead.
Well, does a democracy mean that you... I mean, this is the big government, small government debate, right? Does that mean that you take away things that are harmful, right? If the government's job is to protect... I mean, that's wonderful. I can probably give New Zealand a list of a whole bunch of other things that it should take away if it's really protecting human biology.
Right. If that's their main goal, right. Then.
But this specifically is something that, look, people smoking costs the government. It shortens the lifespan of workers that the government wants. It forces the government to pay for medical care that it doesn't necessarily, that's expensive, right? So, of course, the government does not want people to die of cigarettes.
Becky Medvedz brings up the point, are they going to ban alcohol next? She asks that in our chat. It's a great question.
Yes.
Even Robin asked that question.
And
or sugar.
Or sugar. Sugar is a poison. It has the same as Dr. Richard Lustig points out. He's an amazing doctor. His books on sugar, he specifically points out that sugar, when it hits the body just the same way that rat poison hits the body.
Yes. So. Exactly. So it's interesting, right? It's an interesting debate because you can applaud a move like this, but there, and it will absolutely prevent millions of people from becoming addicted because they cannot then just, I mean, you think about most people don't plan to become smokers. Nobody thinks, oh, when I get older, I'm going to smoke. It's so cool, you know, and I'm going to suffer all of these negative health benefits as a result. It's right. Just people do it socially. Someone is able to get hold of a pack of cigarettes or they think maybe I'll try this as an impulse buy. And those are the things that specific. I mean, really, if someone really wants to smoke, they can have someone else buy it for them.
There'll be a black market, as Cher Marie in our chat says. They're going to be buying it on the black market. Absolutely. I mean, just look at prisons, right? I mean, how do you get? There's literally drugs are in prisons. How are inmates able to get their hands on heroin? Like they get it in prison. Like you know, so they're going to be if someone really wants to get cigarettes, but it is an island country. It's going to be difficult. We'll see.
Actually, statistics are that 13% of New Zealand adults smoke out of a population of 5 million. It's down from 18% almost a decade ago. So it is in decline. But most of the people who smoke are the indigenous Maori population. Is that how you say that?
I don't know.
And that is 31%. So the indigenous people are actually who are smoking more than non-indigenous people. So, yes, it absolutely is something now the government is going to have to police a black market for tobacco. But I think that it's an interesting debate, and I can see both sides of, yes, you should do this, but is it the government's job to protect you, right? Like, these are the kinds of things you used to cover on Fox. Like, should the government take away the Twinkie machine? Oh, we can't have Twinkies. We have the right to have Twinkies. It's our you know, American right,
right.
To eat junk food and... You know,
well, as Sunny Kushal, the chairman of the Dairy and the Business Owners Group in New Zealand, says, this is 100% theory, 0% substance. There's going to be a crime wave. Gangs and criminals will fill this gap, he says. New Zealand is determined to achieve this goal of reducing its national smoking rate to 5% by 2025 and eliminating it altogether. And so politically, you know, I may be a good political move. You're taking on big tobacco, but when you get down to it, yes. Okay, what about you know, what about all the stuff that you find in like deodorants? Are you going to go after like cancer causing agents that are in plastics? Are you going to go after microtoxins in drinking water from these particular companies? Are you going to target styrofoam next? I mean, you know, okay, great. You want to protect your citizenry against smoking, but you know, look, we tried this in the 1920s in the United States with prohibition. Didn't work. You know, it didn't work. It didn't work at all, actually. And it was it created an entire cottage industry of bootlegging and an entire criminal underbelly. So I don't know. I just good luck with that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting quandary. And there are countries around the world in which tobacco is absolutely not allowed, period, bar none. And, you know, New Zealand could do that as well. But then you'd have all of these people with nicotine addictions coming off of it. And who wants that? Right.
Yeah. Good question, though, from Seeking Alpha this morning. It's like big tobacco, you know, is going to be keeping an eye on this now. Right. Because, well, if other countries start to follow suit, you know, New Zealand makes this big crackdown. Will parts of Europe be next? Will the EU step in and say, we're going to do this now? We want to be more green. We want to take care. So maybe they'll step in. Of course, you know, when you walk through Europe, good luck with that, right? Like going down the street at any kind of coffee shop, everyone's sitting outside having a coffee and a cigarette, you know, good luck with that.
Well, yes. So my mom and I, we went to France recently and they laid out all kinds of like a basket of bread and, you know, some olive oil and stuff. And there was a little glass bowl and she's like, oh, is this for the olive oil? And the waiter's like, no, that's an ashtray.
That's an ashtray.
And she hasn't seen one in so long because Americans are not allowed to smoke indoors. And the French are like, yeah, we you know.
They all sit out and have a cigarette and a pastry outside.
No, madame, that is not full. That is for the cigarette. It was so funny that we don't even recognize the accoutrement anymore as Americans because I will say that it is no longer a part of our public life as Americans. We don't have to worry about that. We don't smell it in the mall or indoors at all. So who knows? Who knows who's going to follow suit on this? But I do think that it's at the very least an interesting way to think about curbing new addictions, right? To nicotine. And I think that that's one of the things that Lawrence Lessig talks about, how I think it's Lawrence Lessig, about how Michelle Obama wanted to do this same thing with sugar, to make sure that young people didn't start their sugar addiction so that they didn't have a lifetime of obesity and comorbidities. And the lobbyist groups were like, shut that woman down.
Right.
Do not let her do that.
We need to get these kids to have sugar at birth. It makes them addicted to it.
Right. And so this law is specifically... It is in that vein. It is intended to stop new addictions.
Interesting to see some of the stocks around this too. Looking at Philip Morris down this morning on this news a little bit. Philip Morris here in the center down less than a point.
I'm surprised at how much traction this story has actually. I didn't think people would show as much interest, and I'm interested in the conversation around it.
Oh, I think it's a huge story. Like a country's going to say no cigars, no cigarettes. Like you cannot. If you're born after 2008, sorry, you're just not allowed in this country.
I could not see in any of the stories if that also means e-cigarettes.
It's just tobacco. It's tobacco. From what I can see.
Isn't e-cigarette? I'm sorry, my ignorance. Isn't an e-cigarette a tobacco product?
No, it's a nicotine product, but it has nicotine. No tobacco in it.
There's no tobacco. It has nicotine, but not tobacco.
Okay. I'm ignorant on the difference. I'm sorry. I will not. I'll shut up. I don't know.
You know, like all the pot you smoke?
Yes.
That has,
Okay. All right, good. So why wouldn't they include e-cigarettes? In this?
Good question. I mean, isn't the issue, you know, I mean, you become addicted to nicotine. It's not the tobacco that causes the addiction, right? Unless I'm wrong, but yeah, you become addicted to the nicotine. So the nicotine is the drug. Tobacco is just the plant.
Okay.
It's the plant that's the,
Right. The emission here, I'm just wondering, we don't know.
Well, because maybe they don't care about the addiction. Like they don't care that you're addicted to nicotine because that's not going to lead you to go into a clinic and get a health screening for lung cancer. Like you'll get lung cancer from from tobacco.
I think that there are also cancer rates associated with e-cigarettes.
There are. Yes, you're right about that. In fact, if you've seen some of the lung pictures, I mean, it's horrible.
Let's see if the chat room knows.
The e-cigarette stuff. If you've seen the e-cigarette stuff, you'll notice that, the e-cigarettes...
Maybe the chat room. I'm sorry, we don't know.
There was a thing called popcorn lung that was happening with certain brands of the e-cigarettes.
Vaping.
I think overall they don't like to talk about it because I think the evidence is that it's probably just as addictive when you're adding nicotine to the e-cigarettes, but overall it seems to be a lot healthier than you have less health issues with e-cigarettes and vaping than you do like tobacco products, like smoked tobacco products. So I think they kind of like don't like to talk about it a whole lot
This is from Johns Hopkins Medical. What they say, vaping is less harmful than smoking, but it's still not safe. They heat the nicotine extracted from tobacco and flavorings and other chemicals to create an aerosol that you inhale. However, there's been an outbreak of lung injuries and deaths associated with vaping. Cases appear to predominantly be those people who modify their vaping devices or use black market modified e-liquids.
And now they're no longer allowed to add the like raspberry flavor or anything like that because they were worried that that was creating new addictions. States, that's not allowed.
Right.
Yeah. Washington did that for a bit. They put a ban on, cause I was excited. There was a vape shop just down the street from me that had a pool table in it, and it was going to be a free pool table. I was like, well, I'll go hang out in a vape shop and play pool all day. then they're like a week after they opened, they put the ban on the flavored stuff in Washington, and so then they shut down, and then that ban.
So you couldn't play pool there.
No, I couldn't play pool there. And then when they reopened after they lifted the ban, they didn't put the pool table in. So
rude.
So this THC, I remember President Trump was upset. Remember after he did the vape ban?
Yes.
He said that that was his only regret as president, I think, that when he did that, it was a knee-jerk reaction that he put the ban on e-cigarettes remember the vaping ban for whatever. It was a short amount of time. And it was not from normal, traditionally sold. It was people who had modified these vaping oils and so forth, from what I understand. And those were the ones that were causing the problem. It wasn't from the other companies.
Yeah.
It just destroyed that one company. I forget. Was it QE? I forget the name of the company that got destroyed as a result. I think they went out of business.
Okay. Well, we didn't properly study the distinction between e-cigarettes.
I didn't even know we were going to talk about e-cigarettes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We should have.
Smoke them up today to learn more about
them. If I have thought that through. So I'm sure comments later.
What about those candy cigarettes that we used to blow out? The gum? I know.
Isn't it amazing that they actually allowed us to make a toy out of something that would later kill you?
I wanted those as a kid.
And it was the worst gum, too. It was hard gum. Oh, it was disgusting. Yeah.
And it had like powdered sugar in it as the smoke. And you go, and you only got like two puffs before the powdered sugar blew out. How ridiculous.
Super ridiculous.
I wonder if the tobacco industry had anything to do with that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like it's made by Philip Morris, you know. Cigarettes. Oh, boy.
For the kids.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get to what's trending. We have trending news to get to.
Actually, we have our show sponsor, honey. Would you like
no,
to
No, I already
do...
did. I already took care
oh,
of it.
Oh, you did it. Okay. I wasn't there.
Yeah, you weren't there. But before we get to what's trending, I want to acknowledge our chat room here to say hi to all of our chat room. And there's a person here. This is funny. Yesterday, we were doing a mobile notary for something that we had to do for our business. And one of our mobile notaries watches our show. Asia is her name.
I believe I saw her in the chat. I did not catch your last name, but if that was you, thank you for saying hello to me yesterday. I was tickled pink because
she's like, hey, I watch your show. And she was on a mobile notary. And she's like, at the end of the notary, she said, I watched the show. So I love that.
We don't get a lot of, faces.
Is that Asia right there?
We're speaking to. So I think that was her. Yes. I wanted to say thank you for saying that. You totally made my day. Day and night.
Yes. So, hello, Asia.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to actually have a face to some of these names, and I hope to meet all thousands of you as well in person.
Yes,
someday.
Hopefully we'll be able to have like a.
Please always say hi to us, because otherwise it's just Tim and I looking at each other in a YouTube studio, and
yeah,
we don't get to talk to a lot of people.
No, we were at the mall. I was at the mall the other day, and someone came up and said hi, and they watched the show. And you know, I love saying hi to you guys. So anytime we're out and you see us, please say hi.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, let's get to what's trending.
While we're talking about chat, real quick, if I can just. Like, if somebody's contribution to chat is just all caps, just yelling political statements out, they're not adding anything to conversation, like, don't make me put you in timeout. You're an adult, presumably. It's not my job.
Don't make Philip or David put you in a timeout. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
Just yelling something?
If that's your contribution, just, you know, I don't know, call a friend and yell your stuff at them. I mean, it's just, come on, people.
Exactly. We want to have a conversation here about these stories. You know, these are stories that are largely not going to be covered by the mainstream media, and they're probably going to make you uncomfortable because it may challenge some of your long-held beliefs about the way that the media has been portraying things for so many years. It may challenge this, you know, things that you've been hearing for many, many years, and that's a good thing to be uncomfortable, right? You only grow through discomfort. So, you know, let's just have a conversation here. We don't all have to agree with each other. We're not going to, but let's learn together.
No outbursts.
Let's learn together here.
Like I said to Eve last night,
our 5-year-old,
all emotions are acceptable. Not all behaviors are. So just
brilliant. Yes.
Bring it down. You got to tamper those emotions a little bit.
All right. What's trending today?
All right. Fox News Christmas tree is trending because the 50-foot tree in front of Fox News was set fire by an arsonist who is believed to be a homeless man. Now, Fox News took this on in their coverage, and they really, the anchors felt personally offended by this. But clearly, this is a homeless man in New York, most likely with mental illness. It was not political commentary, I believe. But people are still taking the opportunity to dunk on Fox News and their war on Christmas.
Hmm. Yeah. Now it's a literal war on Christmas at their door. This is like what they've wanted for years.
Yes.
We used to joke in the newsroom there that like, oh, when do we get to start doing the war on Christmas stories?
Right.
Like, you know, because everyone laughed like, here, where's the one guy in the one state in the one little, you know, town that complained about a nativity scene on public grounds?
Yes.
And like now it's a war.
Well, Fox News anchor Ainsley Earhart took the opportunity to say that this Christmas tree represents unity for everybody, and it also represents Hanukkah. So that was a perplexing
Hanukkah tree
assertion.
I didn't know that the Christmas tree represented Hanukkah, but
I mean, specifically, people who are purists about Hanukkah do not want a Christmas tree in their house.
Right.
So, but that's what happens when you smoke a Christmas tree, Ainsley. Sanna Marin is trending. She is the prime minister of Finland. She went to a nightclub on Saturday after her foreign minister tested positive for COVID. She was initially told she could go out, but then she left her phone at home when she went up to the club and says she didn't get the follow-up messages saying, no, you shouldn't go to the club. You should isolate. So she has since apologized. That's her. That's the image you're looking for. Yeah. So, you know, she's 36. She went out. I'm kind of surprised. The piece of this story that surprises me the most is that she went out without her phone. Like, are you allowed to do that? Like, she went out clubbing and nobody could reach her. So she has no security detail. She has no...
She's single and ready to mingle.
I don't think she's single, actually. I think she was married recently, if I recall.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I don't know if that's true or not, but... Anyway, people are kind of noticing her because she's apologized for clubbing and they're like, she's so young and cool. So, you know, like Beyonce says, you don't bring your phone to the club. So that's what happens. So now, you know, people are more upset that she went out after she'd been exposed for COVID and she was told, but she says she was specifically told by the health ministry that she could go and that she couldn't. So,
hey, anyway. James in our chat says this site lacks controversy. It's too one-sided point of view.
But he said that in all caps, so you shouldn't reward him by reading that.
I'm not supposed to reward.
That's the very person that just, and like I said, like, you know, contribute something. I know a lot of people don't like the caps lock thing. It doesn't bother me as much, but like, contribute something. He just literally just shouting.
Well, what I want to know, James, is when you say something like that, be specific. Like what... This whole show is a contrarian point of view. The whole point of this show is you can watch mainstream media 24/7 and get one view. You can watch CNN, MSNBC, all of them are going to give you one corporate view because they're paid for by billionaires.
All right, we should not be giving this person.
No. But I want to say, make the point is, if you're going to share a specific point, please share it. We want to hear a point in the chat. I want to hear what point, an intelligent argument, not just all caps.
Okay. Let's talk about Florence Pugh or Pug.
Okay.
Pugh.
Okay.
She is trending.
P-U.
She is trending because she says she was blocked from Instagram after posting what can be construed as a spoiler from the show Hawkeye, where she plays Black Widow. So I'm not sure, because we are behind on Hawkeye, if just her very presence, meaning Black Widow is in the show, is a spoiler, or I'm not sure. See the other picture here? It says she's here. So clearly she's Black Widow. They refuse to use Scarlett Johansson now after she litigated against the Black Widow movie. So I guess she's the new Black Widow. And I don't know in what context she shows up at all.
Well, because it can't be the Natasha Romanoff Black Widow, because in this exact timeline in Hawkeye, she would be dead.
Yeah.
No, that's,
yeah.
That's not a,
thanks
that's not
for
a spoiler
that spoiler.
Because, I mean, if you haven't seen Endgame yet, then it's not my problem.
No. Right, worried. Exactly. If you're that's like if you don't know what Citizen Kane about Red
exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know that, then you're not really upset about this spoiler.
Exactly. Right?
Nobody's waiting around. Yeah, hoping that Endgame won't be spoiled.
I wouldn't have known what that is. Okay.
But you're right. In the timeline, Endgame has already happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And the timeline of Hawkeye, that much we know.
Yeah, we do. We've watched the first two episodes. We're behind. We need to watch that.
Right. So I don't know exactly what iteration of Black Widow she is, but she's got the French braid. So it's true to form. Listerine is trending after a U.S. senator said that standard mouthwash kills COVID. I do have a video here of it. This is Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. I'll just let him say it.
But there are things you can do, again, vitamin D, you know, zinc, keep yourself healthy, vitamin C. By the way, standard gargle, mouthwash has been proven to kill the coronavirus. Even if you get it, reduce viral replication. There's all kinds. You know, why not try all these things?
Okay, that's why Listerine is trending. Because Listerine has said, absolutely, that's not true. There is no evidence that our mouthwash will help you to kill coronavirus. In fact, some experts say that mouthwash is bad for you overall because it destroys healthy mouth bacteria.
I watched an interview on the School of Greatness with my friend Lewis Howes a few weeks ago. He had a doctor on talking about some of the things we just take for granted. We take every day, and mouthwash being one of them. Like, he's like, absolutely, you should not be using mouthwash. If anything, he said, rinse with a little bit of olive oil, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Olive oil pulling is supposed to be much better for you because the alcohol will destroy the natural microbiome of bacteria in your mouth, which you should have. So anyway, we should not think that Listerine is the cure for COVID, and do your own research about keeping your microbiome safe in your own house.
Yeah.
And finally, hashtag and just like that is trending because Sex and the City's new season is available on HBO. This is what I intend to watch while I am wrapping presents this holiday season. The premiere was last night, and we are going to take this opportunity to show you all the pretty dresses. That's fabulous. That's fabulous. That's fabulous. Just keep clicking. That's fabulous. I mean, look, you guys, it's perfect.
Yes.
Come on. It's gorgeous. The updo.
So this is
Empire
a series,
waist,
right? Not a movie.
The Princess Waist. Yeah, I was under the impression that it was a movie, but actually it's the first two or three episodes were released today. That is the boy who played Brady, their son, who was the baby. This is, okay, you're not excited about it. It's Steven Miranda. Hello.
No, I'm not excited, but okay.
Okay, look at Charlotte's daughter, and a lot of the old characters are back, plus some new ones, and...
Who's that in the, like, with the leg up?
She is the new Samantha, the replaced Samantha.
Is she not in the show?
No, Kim Cattrall, who you may know from Mannequin. The storyline goes that she went to London, that she moved to London and is living her best life there. And so they have another new friend.
She didn't want to be a part of the show anymore?
No. And I don't think it had to do with contract negotiations. She just said, I don't want to do that again. You know, she just wasn't interested. But the show, they really want her back for the next season and they're going to still try. So, yeah, I'm interested in seeing what they do with this show. I have, you know, I want to see all the pretty clothes.
Oh, Jason Frank says, I can't wait for the Reacher series to come out. They're going to do a Jack Reacher series? That would be awesome.
You guys, we're talking about Sex and the City.
Jack Reacher series, that would be fantastic.
No, we're talking, let's go back. Let's look again at the pretty clothes. I'm just going to take the mouse.
What's great about a Jack Reacher series is that there's like 30 books, right? I mean, they could even do one as an episode, right?
We're just going to watch this more. We don't want to talk about that.
So I wonder who will play Jack Reacher. Would it be Tom Cruise? I mean, I don't think it'd be Tom Cruise. He played Jack Reacher in the movies. They probably got to get, you know, somebody who's an up-and-comer.
But the stilettos, I mean, the stilettos are just so classic. You know, young girls, they don't wear stilettos anymore.
What's his name? John Krasinski, the guy that he was in The Office. He wrote Quiet Place. Oh. I think that's who they're looking. It's been a while. I read something a while back on the Jack Reacher series. I think that's who, at least when I read it, that's
because he was in that movie. He was in that he played in the Tom Clancy, the younger version of Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan.
Oh, that might be what I'm thinking. Oh yeah.
That's right. Maybe. That's what he was. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway. All right.
You don't want to talk anymore about stilettos?
No, I don't. But when I started at Fox News in Manhattan many years ago, I did the Sex and the City tour. They had the Sex and the City bus tour. So Dave Briggs and I, we did it as a funny bit. He and I went on the Sex and the City tour and we went around. We tried Cosmos at the place where they go. We went to the different spots. You know, so.
Interesting. It's funny how cities do these tours around movies. Like my mom once did the Angels and Demons tour in Italy.
Yeah.
That's not a pick-me-upper.
Is it really happening, a Jack Reacher series? Jason Frank says, check out the trailer that I posted. Okay. Jason, where can I check out your trailer? Where did you post that? But I will look for it. If I can't find the one you posted, I will do a Google search. All right, everyone. We got to wrap things up. I've got a language lesson here in a few minutes. And that'll be it. All right, everyone.
Okay. Thanks for that. Yeah. And then I'm going to go to the bathroom. Yeah, and then I'm going to check my email. It's exciting.
Let me get a glass of water.
Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Clayton's got to get to it.
Yeah, I got to go get it.
Got to go have your fiber.
Got to have my liver pills.